the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back and goal!
It is officially March. It's March 1st. We are through February, through January. For me personally, the worst months of the year. A little bit closer to spring training. I'm Danny Wexelman with Ashley Chavez, Gemma Kaneko. A lot of things are happening in the sports world. Like, sports are happening. A lot of things. And it's not even actually baseball season. And not to mention, the whole Oscars thing led to a lot of really great sports commentary as well, with them flubbing at the end with La La Land and Moonlight. Gemma, I know Cut 4 had some good content on Oscars picks and, like, just, like, building up the drama and, like, which players would choose what. What was your favorite part about all of this content coming through?
I made some fake posters for movies, Oscar-nominated movies, but instead of being about, you know, what they're about, they were about baseball. So my version of La La Land stars Clayton Kershaw and Justin Turner because he's a redhead like Emma Stone.
Love that.
So those are just fun to make. But, you know, we had film scholar John Axford, who is actually a film scholar.
Yes.
Make his picks, et cetera. So we had some of that stuff. And it was fun. It was fun to see. You know, everyone just got really thrown off by the way it ended.
I heard that he was at a restaurant watching. He left after La La Land was announced and didn't even know till the next day.
I think a lot of people did that. You know, a lot of people turned off the TV right after it was announced and didn't see, you know, the surprise twist.
And we won't get into it today, maybe another time, but I feel like that happens a lot in sports
as
well. People turn it off because they think the team's got it or the game's over, and they wake up the next morning shocked, jaw to the ground.
You know, as I saw a lot of people tweet, La La Land blew a 3-1 lead. So
that's right. And we're going to get to 3-1 leads and the Warriors in a little bit. We also have Dana O'Neill, senior writer for ESPN. She covers college basketball and everything else, one of my personal favorites. So we're going to talk to her before, ahead of Selection Sunday, to get some of her hot takes and kind of find out the land landscape going into March 12th. We're also talking about parents and CTE. We're going to cover the Adidas giving away an island, which is outrageous. We're going to talk Colin Kaepernick as well as a bunch of other topics, Dancing with the Stars. So without further ado, let's get it going. Try not to suck. That is the advice that Anthony Rizzo had for David Ross, Grandpa Rossi. He is officially on this season's Dancing with the Stars. He's going to be 39 years old. He is 39 years old. And he has some stiff competition. He has Simone Biles, Nancy Kerrigan, Mr. T, this year's Bachelor. But trend or trash, can David Ross win the mirror ball in Dancing with the Stars?
I would like to trend that David Ross is on the show,
yes,
but he's not going to win. Not because I think he's a bad dancer. I'm sure he's great. Okay. I'm sure his partner is going to be really good. But if it just, like, it has shown over time, it's just been proven that if you are a figure skater or a gymnast, you are going to win the show. That's just what happens. And there's no way that Simone Biles loses Dancing with the Stars. You don't win everything and then lose Dancing with the Stars. You don't.
Okay.
So,
Ash?
As much as I love Simone Biles, this was a mistake on the show to bring her on. Because Gemma's exactly right. What is the point of watching this? It should just be an hour of watching Simone Biles practice and then dance, because I'm literally not interested in how badly everyone does in comparison, unless they had the entire U.S. gymnastics team compete on Dancing with the Stars. That's something that I would actually watch. So bad job to the show, people. but I am excited to see David Ross. I think it'll be adorable as always. I mean, this is truly the most perfect way to retire for him. So I'm very excited to see how he does. I hope for entertainment's sake, they let him stay on for, like, at least semifinals. I mean, that's cool, right? As much as we'd love to see him in the finals, but there's just no chance in hell. So I don't know. Good
I mean,
luck.
I think he's going to do a good job. I don't think he's going to be bad because he's an athlete and athletes are good at Dancing with the Stars. Just they generally have been.
Yes.
So
but
football players are good.
Listen, both of you are wrong. I'm just declaring it right here and right now. You're both wrong. Grandpa Rossi is going all the way, and he's going to win it. People love a good story. People love the underdog. Yes, the track record are dancers and gymnasts and figure skaters. They generally do the best because they have the cute little bodies that can move. But I just think that he's the first Major League Baseball player to be asked to go on this show, and I think he's going to bring it home for all those other guys who may not be as coordinated and may be real old.
Oh, I'm playing the world's tiniest violin for all the sad, underprivileged baseball players. Oh, so sad for them.
David Ross, bring it in home.
I just want everybody to know that Danny is anti-Simone Biles. So that is what the side she's chosen to take here.
That's what these things clearly have shown. I'm very pro Nancy Kerrigan, though. Like, hey, Nancy.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, we're going to move on. So, okay, this is really, really interesting, actually. And I'm really excited to hear what you guys have to think. But I think we're all going to be on the same page. So North Carolina lawmakers proposed that parents should be allowed to let their kids go back into a game after suffering a concussion. Now, before I let you guys talk, they already overturned this rule. They already said, actually, wait a second, this isn't a good idea. Maybe thinking that parents allowing parents who aren't medical officials, who have no medical background, shouldn't allow their kids to go back in the games isn't a good idea. Great. Good job. Like, we got past that point. But what I want to know is, trend or trash, does the way that kids play football today need to change based on an idea that something like this could have been passed? So let's talk about a couple of different topics on that. So Gemma, I want to start with you. Let's just hear what you have to say.
Well, I think that we are actually seeing fewer kids play youth football. I just think that's something that is happening, or just they don't start as young as maybe kids used to start playing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not the first people to ever talk about this. I've listened to This American Life episode a while ago about this woman who's the daughter of an NFL player, and she was like, I wanted to put my kid in, like, you know, 5-year-old football, and he was a giant child and was like bulldozing all these other kids, and he's like, ouch, I don't like this, I want to play tennis. You know, just okay. There's this sense also that these kids getting hurt, and that to me is just emblematic in general of maybe this isn't the way that the way that kids are playing football is already going to change because kids don't want to be in those situations, you know.
Right.
So that's one thing.
Okay.
The other thing is that I think that there definitely do need to be changes in the way that, like, middle school and high school kids play football.
Okay.
Which is different than, you know, 5-year-old kids, 6-year-old
right.
kids
play yeah.
football. Which is that if this could happen, if they could say, oh, whatever, go back in on the sideline, it's fine, that is dangerous. And I'm not sure what rule changes to put in. Maybe Ashley has a clear idea about that. I'm not saying, like, it should always be tag all the time, always, you know? Yeah. But I think there has to be some kind of safety change for younger kids, for, like, middle school and high school kids.
Right. And, Ashley, I'm interested to hear what you have to say, because obviously we're not going to move to touch football, to flag football. That's right. Never going to happen because no one's going to watch that.
Right.
But things have to change. And real quick, Ash, so some stats I just want to read. And this comes from the Department of Veterans Affairs in Boston University, who said that CTE was found in 96% of NFL players that they examined and in 79% of all football players. And then in total, the lab found that CTE in the brain tissue in 131 out of 165 individuals who, before their deaths, played football either professionally, semi-professionally, in college, or in high school. So those are pretty serious numbers. So Ash, what do you think about all this?
It's just so tough because we're slowly finding out that maybe human beings shouldn't have gotten to the sport to begin with. And it just became hugely popular, so how are we going to get out of it? I do think that with the children, the best way to fix the sport is to remove padding and to remove helmets, because you're not going to slam your entire body headfirst into someone if you don't have the protective gear. So start them out getting used to less protection, which sounds silly, like we're going backwards, but ultimately will stop that non-instinct that football players now have of just ramming your body as hard as you can into someone else. I do think that it's silly that this law was even created to begin with, and I don't understand how laws work. I mean, to me, it just seems like there's just some alternate universe where it's like, yeah, well, we shouldn't bathe our children in poison, but let's just bring this law to the table and see what happens. You know, it's very silly that we even are talking about this. So that's a whole nother, like, child protective services thing that I think we need to get into. The fact that some people were okay with that is very, very scary. But I mean, other parts of the country are different, and we need to examine that in a smaller scale, see what's going on. I just watched this Viceland last night about these children in Miami at Liberty City, which is like the hotbed of football for the entire nation. So many famous athletes come out of this tiny part, this neighborhood of Miami where they start kids at 6 years old in intense rivalries, which it's the Vice Sports Rivalry series. Absolutely everyone should watch it. Shout out to everyone who made it. It's incredible. But these kids are starting at 6 years old, going head first and going nuts on people. And you have these super fans of these children because they know that they're watching from the very beginning superstars develop. But at the same time, we're encouraging the children to just demolish each other. And can't do that anymore because the numbers are showing that the chances of you getting brain damage are pretty high. That's insane. So I do think that the solution is to take less padding, more padding away from the kids and then get them used to playing that way, because we're not going to be able to do touch football. That's not a sport. No one's going to watch that. Mm-hmm. So football will die at that mm-hmm. point. I mean, I'm kind of okay with it dying, to be totally honest.
Yeah, well, I think the question that we're all kind of really talking around is, should anybody be allowed to play football?
Yeah,
which
really
is which is this thing that we don't really want to say, no, ban football forever, right? Because people like to watch it and it's fun to watch. But ultimately, the issue we're circling around is it safe for anyone at any time at all? Like, because I agree that maybe it would make it a little bit more safer to play without padding, but rugby players still get CTE.
Right.
You know, it's not
true.
Like, and soccer
athletes.
Players still get it.
Yeah.
Soccer players and rugby players who don't have that, you know. And rugby, I think, is a little bit closer in terms of an analog to this because there are, because, you know, you're not really supposed to be tackling people like that in soccer, even if people occasionally do. It's really more like headers, whatever, which is a separate issue. But rugby is a contact sport,
right.
You know. So, but I think rugby players still suffer from brain damage as well. So the question is now we're like in this kind of gross place where we're like, what amount of brain damage is acceptable us to keep watching the sport? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I want to trend this topic because I think the more that we talk about it, the more people will kind of realize that, hey, there is something wrong here. I'm just really surprised that we haven't come out with technology that is better. I know that they have like more padding and helmets and they changed the rules on where you hit and how you hit. But I feel like it starts from the bottom up. It starts with the 6 year olds and it's making sure that they're hitting properly and that when they do feel symptoms that they're coming out and that those numbers are logged very carefully. And when a kid hits a certain amount, not that they even should ever hit it. But like, again, this game exists to entertain, but it also exists to teach. Right? We see that with youth and sports, they're learning a lot of different life lessons. And I wouldn't want it to go away because it gets kids into a safe place after school, right? It gives them a place to learn and grow, gives them a place to maybe understand what a mentor is and how to take criticism and how to be a teammate.
And discipline.
That's a great point. There's so many like lessons that you can learn. You can learn those in other sports and other ways. You don't need a helmet and pads to learn those lessons. But I feel like football teams grow this bond and have this really special bond because, you know, they're like brothers in arms together going through this. But I feel like there's got to be a better way. The technology needs to improve right now, and the youth systems need to improve even faster. And that's up to like the coaches and the parents and the leaders. And I know you're gonna say something in a second. I know. Hold on, let me finish. I think football going away is the best answer to all of this, but I do think that it brings some pretty powerful life opportunities to the table as well.
Yeah, because I do just think it puts us in this weird moral calculus of saying what is an acceptable amount of injury, because mm-hmm. there's no option of saying, well, we should just get rid of all like Pop Warner leagues. We should just, you know, kids under a certain age should just not play. Like, that's not really on the table. I mean, maybe it is in some degree, but nobody, I think, is seriously considering saying like you shouldn't be allowed to play football till you're 18.
Well, the problem
and
with that
too is you
can
make your own choices with your body, right? Like, you're a legal adult. Like, you can't smoke a cigarette till you're 18. That's damaging, right? But playing football is also really physically damaging to your body. Like, that's not
especially
an option.
Especially if you don't know how to do it properly. Right. You're just learning at 18
but
years
if
old.
If you're saying properly, what we're saying is there is an acceptable amount of injury, because what? Like, a hit is still a hit.
Right.
You know, there's no world in which that's not something that happens. So if you're like 8, 9, 10, you know, going into middle, then you're like 12, 13 going into middle school, like, you will sustain these injuries. The odds are you probably will get at least one concussion in your football career, right?
Definitely.
So we're saying, like, okay, to some degree, it is acceptable for these kids to be injured mm-hmm. to keep playing the sport. And that is the trade-off that we're willing to make, which to me feels really gross,
right.
But also I don't really know what the other opportunity is. I do think that if football went away, it's not like nothing would jump in to fill that vacuum. It's not like no other team sport exists that kids could play.
Definitely.
You know?
I think that if the sport exists, if it's going to exist, then one, kids can't start at 18, and two, they do need to learn how to play the game properly and the right way and make hits so that they're not going helmet to helmet and helmet to
but how do you learn? Right. You learn by failing once, twice, three times.
Yeah, so that's the nature of the beast.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if we're saying kids should be allowed to play football, we're saying we're all okay with some degree of like childhood brain damage.
Yeah.
But I think that's with a lot of sports. I think that we would have to look at all things because you can get hit in the head in baseball. You can, I mean, I'm glad they stopped headers at such a young age, but people were, you could potentially develop CTE with that. And also just playing around. Like kids, if they want to get into extreme sports, I mean, look at Dave Mira. You can be playing around and having a fun time with your extreme sports. Fall a bunch of times, you're going to fall a million times. It's part of being a kid and it's part of playing sports and everything. But
biking.
I understand what you're saying. It's like we obviously have a very serious problem with football. With football in particular, we have staggering numbers of this damage. I think, though, that it's really hard to say, and you're right, it is gross, and we can't say that a certain amount of brain damage or a chance of brain damage is okay for children, but I do think that's up to, unfortunately, the parents, and you put your child in danger, I guess, at this point if you enter your child into Pop Warner leagues, but it does, at a certain point, get a little scary, like when, with this North Carolina rule that almost passed, this law that almost passed, does Child Protective Services get involved in that situation? Because we clearly know that when you have a concussion, you should not be playing again. And to put your child in danger that way is very alarming. So I don't know. It's such a difficult thing.
I think that we're going to see more things come out about this. And I think – I have a feeling we're going to see some rule changes this year in like, youth leagues. So we're going to have lots more.
It has to start with the youth. Yeah.
To talk about this. Okay, let's switch gears because ring the alarms. Kevin Durant is out. He's out for a few weeks.
Ugh,
yeah, we're not ringing
not
the alarms
the
for
right
a good
alarm.
Reason. We're ringing the alarms because the Golden State fan base is freaking out. Any Warriors fans are freaking out. But I feel like everyone kind of needs to push the let's relax for a second button. So let me throw some stats at you really quick. So the Warriors are 50-10. They lead the Spurs by 4 games in the Western Conference right now. So they're doing pretty good for themselves. But the Spurs are on a 4-game win streak. KD leads the team in almost 26 points per game. He also has almost 9 rebounds a game. So it's going to be a bit of a loss. He's out for a few weeks with a sprained MCL and some bone bruises. But, you know, trend or trash, can the Warriors still thrive without KD? Ash?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to trend this. Obviously, it's a huge, huge, massive story. This is big for literally everyone in the basketball world because you either hate him or love him, I think, at this point. So the haters are rejoicing now. But I think be careful to y'all haters because look at who we're talking about. We're not talking about some, like, small little team with only one huge, massive star. We're talking about a team of stars that everyone said they're not going to be able to get it together, and they clearly have. Well, now they're just going back to their old ways. Their old championship way. I mean, I'm not worried about it right now. I am so sad that he's not a part of this team because I really do think that beyond the fact that he is averaging crazy numbers on this crazy team, everyone loved each other and you could clearly see it. Everyone had each other's backs. Everyone was so supportive. Like the assists alone were amazing. So it is like, it's sad to see that go because they were all fun to watch, especially having this giant tall guy just like murder straight left and right. But I think that they'll be fine. I think they kind of needed this, and I think this is going to help them in the long run. I'm excited to see how they handle this. I know if any team can handle something like this, it is the Warriors and it is Steve Kerr. So it's definitely adding an interesting wrench into this already crazy season. So I mean, I think this might be some like good thing for the Warriors. I don't know. That's kind of terrible, maybe a little macabre to say, but I do think that this will be good.
Very
we'll
optimistic
see.
Of you.
I might just be being like crazy optimistic and a fool, but it's definitely going to be exciting to watch them now. So we'll see.
I wonder what team Ashley's a fan of. What
it's
a
hard
hey,
mystery.
I should be panicking and I'm not. So.
Gemma, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, we see big players go down a lot. We see fan bases react, overreact, burn jerseys, like, you know, set the city on fire.
Well,
what are your thoughts on this?
I hope nobody sets anything on fire.
No. No fires, yeah. Please.
I mean, I don't. The odds makers still say that the Warriors look really good.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and despite the fact that our national trust in odds makers of all sorts may have eroded recently for reasons unknown, I do think that it's not – I don't think it's time to throw in the towel. You know, this team is really talented, was talented before KD, will continue to be talented, and he'll probably come back. So I don't really think that it's time to just give up all hope or anything like that. Besides – if there's any way to get people back on the Warriors train, you know, as opposed to like, oh, they win so much, I can't like them anymore, you know, it's definitely this come from
That's
behind,
so
like,
true.
Team injury story, right? Yes. If you want national sympathy again, you need to, like, you got
to
have
you
a
need
hook.
To hurt yourself.
Gemma hits the nail on That's the head. It. And we've been seeing, I saw a lot of stories out saying maybe this is what they needed to really, like, you know, bring this one home is this superstar loss. And, guys, like, I have three words for you, okay? Curry, Green, Thompson. They're going to be just fine. Just fine.
And that bench is still fire.
The bench is fire. Everyone's going to be fine. They're going to be fine.
We're
who,
all fine.
Who might not be fine? Colin Kaepernick. Let's switch over to the NFL. Did you like that transition? So Colin Kaepernick.
Very good.
Yeah,
very
is officially
good.
A free agent. That's coming from Ian Rapoport and the NFL. He's also moving to a new agent. He's a free agent, and he's got a new agent to help him navigate these uncharted waters for him. I think everyone saw this coming last year. They rearranged his contract, and so this wasn't that surprising. But I think what's most interesting is where is the guy going to land? He's a veteran quarterback. Last season he was 1-10, 1-11, like, but his numbers were good despite that record. That was a crap record. But where's the guy going to land? Is he going to get a starting job? Is he going to be a backup the rest of his life? Will the fact that he took a social stand by taking a knee during the national anthem affect this at all? Is that a thing? So trend or trash? Can Colin Kaepernick get a starting quarterback job? Ash, take me home here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to trend this because it is very interesting. And obviously I have some a dog in this race of some sort.
That's
because
right.
I am a 49er fan, so trend it. what do I think about Colin Kaepernick? That is the greatest football question right now that has not involved some kind of death or health scare situation. I don't know where he should go.
So we had some technical difficulties with our friend Ashley out in LA. That's what happens with technology sometimes. But she was making some really solid points about Colin Kaepernick, where he's going to land. I think we're all interested to find out where that guy's going to go. He's got 31 teams, I suppose, up for grabs. Adidas is giving away an island. They're giving away an actual island with the value of $1 million. If an NFL draft prospect can run the 40-yard dash faster than Chris Johnson, which he ran in 4.24 seconds, do you think – I have a couple of questions. One, can you run the 40-yard dash faster than 4.24 seconds? Gemma?
Definitely not.
Okay. Two, would you rather have an island or $1 million?
Well, would I own the island, but also just have the money I currently have?
You get to own the island or you get $1 million.
But if I, okay, but like, because it's like, if I own the island, but still have only the money I currently have, I feel like it'd be kind of lame to own the island because I rent, like, I don't even own my apartment. So I'm like, where would I live on this island? Are there already houses there?
No. You get the island with nothing on it. Or $1 million.
I want $1 million.
Okay. See, I want the island, and I would rent out my island
and make money. Second level.
Yeah,
that's right. So much smarter than I could ever have come up with.
So that's kind of crazy. They give away $1 million if you break the record, but now throwing on an island, be like, I own an island. I did a little research. You can buy islands for like $275K.
Oh, well, you know,
so
great.
So take the money and buy your own island and save a little cash. I'm not sure. Okay, a couple other things. So Will Leach says that Boston, that the AL East is theirs. It's theirs to lose. Do we agree?
You know what? I do. Generally, I like to be condescendingly anti-Red Sox because Rena, our producer, is a big fan, and also Dakota on the Cut Forecast is a big fan of the Red Sox. But I actually think this team is pretty good. I'm still pro David Price. I think he's going to have a great season.
Okay.
Knock on wood for David.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I look at the other teams in the AL East, I just don't see the same level of competence across all fields.
Okay.
You know, I like the Blue Jays. I'm also pro Blue Jays.
Yes.
So I'm excited to see how their season goes as well. But I just think, like, you have two guys on the Red Sox who were both in conversation for the MVP last year, you know? So, like, that is Mookie Betts obviously being much higher in that race. But still.
Right.
So that's going to be really just – it's going to be fun to see him play again. And that entire team has a lot going on. What do you think?
So I think that the Yankees, I think that their young guys are going to shine. I think that's what they do. The Yankees do it every year. And I think that they're going to be the pesky little fly in the room and the annoying little moth for the Red Sox. And I really want to see the Blue Jays do well, to be honest. Like, I really want to see them. They got rid of Edwin.
Sad,
but, like, let's see what you got.
I just love Josh Donaldson. I know his hair is terrible, but he has
dyed
really
blonde.
Oh, it's so bad.
I love it.
Oh,
more blonde.
He has a really cute dog now, though. And, you know, any time I can see more of that dog, I want to. So.
Okay, so we're doing this really weird thing because I'm a loser, and we're we're on Instagram Live right now, so that's fun. So this podcast, we're wrapping up. We had a conversation with Dana O'Neill today. She is the senior writer at ESPN for college basketball, and just a fantastic person. Her writing is unbelievable. Her journalism, like the things that she covers and how she covers it, amazes me. I could read her stories for days. And we had a chance to talk to her about Selection Sunday, which is March 12th, who she's got in the Final Four, who she's got going all the way, what she thinks about Gonzaga. You do not want to miss out on this, so please take a listen. So we have Dana O'Neill, one of my all-time favorite writers. She's a senior writer at ESPN covering college basketball. Dana, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm always glad to do it. No problem.
So you've got your head on straight, but it is March 1st, so that things could change pretty quickly. We are a week out from Selection Sunday, a little more than a week out. So we're ahead of ourselves, but I want to first start with some of the big things happening during senior week. And I want to know, in your opinion, what do you think has been a better moment? Kansas's Frank Mason III thanking his five-year-old son on senior day, or Michigan State giving Aaron Harris one more chance to enter the game. He had a season-ending injury. He kissed the Spartan. Which one of those stands out more?
Oh, man, that's like trying to pick my favorite child.
Yeah.
I mean, they were both phenomenal, obviously, for different reasons. I think, you know, in some regards, the Aaron Harris thing just hit me harder because I know how devastated he was by that injury and how devastated, frankly, Michigan State was. And it wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to walk on the floor. They actually checked him into the game, put him in uniform, let him have a moment to kiss the court. That was pretty stinking special because I think, you know, any senior that goes through season-ending injury, especially this close to the end of the season, is just in such a dark place. And to give him the opportunity to just kind of feel like he's still part of something special, I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is heartbreaking, and I feel like you cover these teams so closely, and you tell such intricate stories. I'm wondering, you know, is there something that you're looking forward to tournament-wise? Is there a certain player that you're looking forward to potentially covering, or a storyline? Anything coming up that we should look forward to from you?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of broad storylines. Obviously, you know, is this the year for Gonzaga? Can Villanova repeat? I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of obvious questions, I think, that are out there. But within those, you're right, within those games and teams, there are certainly a lot of players that I'm anxious to see. Like, I was just sitting here going through some things today, and I was looking at teams like, okay, who could make some noise if they make it, like little mid-majors and such. Monmouth is one, and you know, Justin Robinson, who was this, you know, 5'8" guy for Monmouth, and everyone knew the bench mob. If he gets in the tournament, people are going to fall in love with him. So I think he would be someone fun to write about. You know, Nigel Hayes at Wisconsin, you never know what's going to come out of his mouth once he gets in front of a podium. So he's always entertaining. And that's what I love about the NCAA tournament is that both people that we think we know well and people that we don't know at all sort of for a couple of weeks become household names for different reasons. And that's what makes it so much fun.
I totally agree. And the thing, too, is it doesn't matter if you watched all season or you join in March. I feel like people fall in love with the people and the storylines, and they are rooting for someone that they didn't know a week ago, and now it's the only thing they can talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all been there, right? I mean, like, I remember well, that wasn't that long ago, but, you know, Ali Farrakhmanis, who hit the shot for Northern Iowa to beat Kansas. Before that, nobody knew Northern Iowa was even a school. And then everyone knew about, you know, Ali Farrakhmanis because he hit this crazy three-pointer to beat Kansas. You know, at some level, Steph Curry became Steph Curry when he was at Davidson in that NCAA tournament run. So, yeah, we all kind of find these little stories, and they take over. And that's what makes it so much fun, because I sit here and I think, okay, this is probably what we're going to be talking about, and in 2 weeks, it's not going to be what we're talking about at all.
Yeah, it's really special that way. So Selection Sunday is on March 12th, so obviously we're still waiting for all the conference tournaments and whatnot, but, you know, we're talking a little bit about some of these mid-major teams. Is there a team that you want to see make the tournament that deserves to make it? They're on the bubble, potentially?
Well, there's a lot, and here's what bothers me, I guess, especially this year, it seems like. There's a very large voice, it seems like, for teams that are in the middle pack of their leagues of the Power Five, you know, the Tennessees and the Vanderbilts and all of these teams that are Michigan, that are good but haven't been great. I would rather see, you know, an Illinois State or a Wichita State, if Wichita State doesn't win the Missouri Valley. Or, you know, I would rather see Valparaiso if they don't win the Horizon because Alec Peters is hurt. I always feel like these middle-of-the-pack Power 5 teams have more than an ample opportunity to win and prove their worth within their conference. The mid-majors who are forced to go on the road and play all these games because nobody wants to come to their place, and they might lose them, but they go out and do what the committee says, and then they're left out because of some other team that had the opportunity. That just always bugs me. So honestly, I am rooting for the little guy, and I'm hoping that Mark Hollis, who is Michigan State AD and a different thinker, will follow my thinking and put in teams that maybe would be traditionally out of a one-bid league and give them a chance.
I love that. And so sticking with that theme, is there something that you think, I mean, the tournament, what can change about it? Well, how could it be better in your eyes?
Well, I think that's a big part of it, and I don't know how you fix that because, you know, obviously when people get into that committee room, it's very subjective, and so you, no matter how much data you put in front of them, it's still subjective thinking. But I do think that part of what makes it special is those teams that we don't get to hear of all the time, and this is their opportunity. And we ask teams to go out and play difficult road games and difficult non-conference schedules, and those teams especially do. Because they have to make money and do whatever else. But don't penalize them for losing them, as long as, you know, they're respectable, they're not getting their doors blown off, especially if they then do well for their leagues. I think there just needs to be better consideration taken for, you set these ground rules for non-conference games, and then these teams abide by them, but they can't play any at home, and then they almost get penalized for doing what you told them to do. So I don't know, like I said, I don't know how you can't necessarily mandate that, but mm-hmm. You can certainly plant that seed in the selection committee's mind.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I would look forward to seeing something change as far as all that goes. And
yeah,
I wouldn't put it past them to do that. I feel like, I mean, obviously with college football, they changed things up. People didn't like it at first, but, you know, they're kind of getting their grip on what this is and how they can be successful at it anyway, or trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I want to go back to Gonzaga. So the committee gave a little sneak peek at some of their selections. And at the time, Gonzaga had a perfect record. And they weren't even the number one overall seed. Now, obviously, they have a loss to BYU. And so I'm wondering, you know, where do you see them fitting in? That was a home loss, by the way, to BYU,
right,
to, you know, a team that is obviously probably not going to get an at-large bid. So where do these guys fit in? Where do they deserve to fit in?
Well, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, I don't think they have any wiggle room in the West Coast Conference tournament. I don't think that they can lose, certainly in their first game. I'm not sure if they can lose the championship game and hold on to a one seed, because the best that they would likely play is St. Mary's or BYU again, and that's not going to really move the needle a lot. So I think that they right now are probably the third or fourth number one seed, you know, Kansas, Villanova, and whoever kind of wins the ACC, more than likely, especially if it's North Carolina, would probably be weighted ahead of them. But if they lose in that conference tournament and somebody else comes along, you know, it could be interesting for them. I understand the question marks about Gonzaga, and I get it, especially after they lost that game. But it's one of those other things that, you know, Gonzaga can't control who's in the West Coast Conference, and they can't control how good those other teams are. All they can do is go out and play as well as they can and win as many games as they can, and they won all but one of them. And to me, to penalize them for what their competition isn't, you know, I don't know what else you want them to do. They were beating teams very handily. It wasn't like they were just squeaking by until that BYU game. They're playing, if you look at them, they're great offensively and defensively. They do have, you know, wins against Iowa State and Arizona and Tennessee and Florida. They have good non-league wins, even though they were a while ago.
Right.
So, to me, if you've got a one loss or even maybe a two loss, I think it's an awful hard penalty to send, especially when we don't have a lot of dominant teams. It's not like, you know, I can see people making the case for the Pac-12 champion, but it's not like they are head and shoulders above Gonzaga. So, to me, I think they ought to be considered for a number one seed. I'm not sure if they will if they lose in that conference tournament.
I just wonder, you know, what these guys have to hop on one leg and pat their stomach and rub their head, you know? Like, what else do they need to do to prove that? So I'm totally with you on that. But I guess, you know, they have, like you said, a little not much wiggle room, if at all. So I'm really interested.
If you have an eye test and you watch them play, I think part of Gonzaga's problem is that people think they're the same old Gonzaga, which is to say they're this beautiful offensive team and they can't defend, you know, a doorpost. That's not at all who they are. They're very good defensively. They're very balanced with front court and back court players. You know, this is a really good basketball team if you just watch them play. So you're kind of painting, you know, you're committing the cardinal sin of what the committee and others aren't supposed to do. You're not supposed to judge a team on who they were, but who they are in the moment.
Right.
And who they are in the moment is really good.
That's a really great point. Okay, let's do a little rapid fire. I'm going to put you on the spot. That's a little bit of an Oscars theme, but also I want to know from this season, best picture, so meaning the best game or single player that you saw this season.
Well, if I had to go for the best game, I think prisoner of the moment a little bit. I was at the Syracuse-Duke game last week, and just a bank shot 3-point game winner. You don't see many of those.
No.
And with it followed by an insane, never-ending storm court storming, I'll take that as perhaps the best game I've seen. The best player, you know, I think, you know, if we want to go off Broadway a little bit, or you know, off into the indie films, if you will, if we're going to the Oscars, I would do Marcus Keene at Central Michigan, who nobody knows about. He's just obscene, you know, point scorer that I don't know if he's got Central Michigan will even make the NCAA tournament, but he has just been lights out all year, and he's again like one of those little guys. He's averaging almost 30 points a game, and it's just fun to watch him play.
I love it. And what about best director? Who's going to get Coach of the Year in your eyes?
Toughest, I think, choice out there right now. Honestly, I had to do it, and I could have put 20 names in there. I ended up going with Chris Collins at Northwestern because anytime Northwestern gets into the NCAA tournament, finally, the coach in charge ought to be given Coach of the Year honors. But
I
could have put Steve Alford, Tim Jankovic at UCLA. I could have put a lot of people in there.
That's a great, great answer. Can I put you on the spot for your final four choices if it was today?
Sure. If I were ending today, I would go with Villanova, Arizona, Louisville, and North Carolina.
And who's going all the way?
North Carolina. I think they got a little revenge on their mind after the Marcus Page three-pointer didn't amount to nothing last year.
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right. All right. Well, Dana, I really appreciate your time and your intelligence and your thoughtfulness on all these topics. And, again, your writing is fantastic. You're a senior writer at ESPN, covering college basketball and a lot of other different things, and you're fantastic. So thank you again so much.
Oh, anytime, Danny. I'm glad to do it. My pleasure.
Okay. Well, have a great day. Keep your head on straight. And good luck for the next month.
Thank you. Take care.
See ya. We talked about a lot of really interesting things. David Ross, we will catch every week on Dancing with the Stars, which will be great to see how well he does. I'm also rooting for Simone Biles, for anybody out there who thinks that I'm anti-Simone
Biles. Now you say
Simone
that.
Biles.
Yeah, okay, fine, whatever.
Let's see. We also talked about concussions and where football is going as far as youth participation. Kevin Durant and why the Warriors are going to be just fine. Spring training is heading into week three. Things are getting, I think, a little bit more interesting as we head into the regular season. It's not too far away. So please subscribe on iTunes. Rate, review, write, share, all those great verbs per usual. Bless you, Gemma. And we will catch you next time.
Now the 2-2. Well hit, down the left field.